normally on the M2M podcast, we talk about a story before it airs, and we usually don't get into the topic again after it airs and before the re-air. But Colleen Bradford Krantz always decides we just should change everything up here and always trying to rip everything up. And so today, Colleen, we're going to discuss the series Justice in Agriculture as we get ready to re-air, but there's a couple of reasons for that. Hello, I'm Paul Yeager. This is the M2M Podcast, a production of Iowa Public Television and the Market to Market TV show. Colleen, the reason that we're going to cover this topic, it aired in late 2018, right?
Yeah,
the first time. Yep. The first time through. And now here, as we get to late 2019, there has been some major updates in at least one of these three reports. This was quite a comprehensive, not just on air, but also on the web that we did for this series.
Yeah, it was kind of a look at where agriculture intersects with the courts and sort of civil and criminal courts, I guess.
And where did the idea come from?
I'd thought about this for a long time, even going back to when I was working at newspapers still. I always thought it'd be interesting to sort of dive deeper into various, cases, whether they're civil or criminal, and look at that interaction of those two worlds, which seems so so different from one another, but really government and farmers interact a lot and more going forward. So the time felt right to sort of dive into that.
Were you initially searching for just one story and it became three, or how did you get to that number?
I think as we started researching just for one story, it was so broad and there were so many different angles that, I talked our executive producer Dave into giving me a little more time on this topic because there was such such wide areas we could focus on.
So this, what was the first story in the series that you wanted to, what started this all? Do you remember which one?
I started with the agricultural inspector, who gentleman from the South. He lives in Georgia now, but he spent almost three decades investigating agricultural crimes for the Office of Inspector General.
And you knew about him, and that was the whole precipice for starting this.
No,
is that right?
I think it was just my curiosity about somebody doing that job. I approached several, and including the current Office of Inspector General, USDA investigators. But the agency, as you can imagine, wasn't crazy about having me spend time with a current investigator. So I started looking for someone who had retired. So I didn't have a particular person in mind, but a particular job. And it worked out nice because with the retirement, he has a little more flexibility to tell stories from his past.
And can say, not have to say, or go to the line of, well, that's still under investigation. And in some cases, some of those might have been, but other things, he wasn't held by current work policies that allowed him to speak about his work.
Right. We did try to be careful if we knew a case was ongoing. Both of us, I guess, he would hold back, but sometimes he also told me things that I knew, well, that's current. But for the most part, the cases he was on had sort of wrapped up and gone through the courts and were resolved, so it did make it easier.
Okay. So you find that first part, and you start kind of fishing around, and as a story investigation goes, or just story development, you find, oh, well, that's interesting. Well, that would be something that I think viewers would... That's how it develops for me. Is that same for you?
In this, when I spent time with the investigator, he talked in the story, we'll look at a huge fraud case that dealt with tobacco fraud and government programs. But I started thinking about, what if we did a separate story where we look at somebody who had spent time in prison for, in an unrelated case, and ask them to tell, what is it like to sort of spend time behind bars as a farmer or somebody in agricultural business. And so we did go seeking that. And then the third story, I wanted to also find somebody who sort of had proven that they were not guilty of something they were accused of, to get a farmer who had beat the allegations and shown that they were innocent.
How easy or hard was it to find either of those subjects?
Well, it was, both of them took a little time. I would say we ended up going to North Dakota to visit Lenny Peterson in Lemoore, North Dakota, for a story about somebody who had sort of beat the allegations. And he was accused of swamp busting, which is basically draining a swamp without permission. And he spent 6 years, and the story gets into the details, but spent 6 years before he ended up winning the case, basically. I mean, that all that time fighting in courts at different levels and administrative courts and so on. The story about somebody who'd spent time in prison was much more difficult to find somebody who was willing to talk to me. I think I probably approached, either sent letters to people in prison or approached, called, visited probably 20 different people before I found one man in Missouri who was willing to talk about his time in prison.
How did you find the people to write to in the first place?
I went through old U.S. attorney reports. When someone's charged, you know, by the U.S. attorney's office for basically violating or being accused of violating federal guidelines or laws related to agricultural programs, they sometimes do a press release, but you can also find that in public records. So I basically combed through public records for names, and then once I had names, I would research each individual case and say, you know, is that person still in prison? And if so, where? And then I would go through the process of writing a letter to them. In some cases, if they were released, I'd track down, are they in the back where they were before? And it was a very slow process over months and months of, you know, sending letters, waiting for responses, and, you know, often getting nothing, but sometimes getting no thank you or conversations. But in the end, no, it's not right. Finally, after probably 20 or more attempts, I found one person.
When they would respond and they would say no, was an answer ever, I'm moving on with my life, I'm no longer in agriculture? Were there a couple of those?
Yeah, there was. There were. In fact, I think I had two other longer conversations with, you know, two men who had spent time in prison, and I won't get into where they were or anything, but they both considered it just with the idea that maybe it could be a lesson for another farmer. They understood why I thought that might be valuable, and they agreed. But it was it's hard to reenter, you know, being in ag business or agriculture with that label on you now. And all their neighbors would know that, but they didn't really want to broaden the reach, even if it was helpful to other farmers down the road.
Because time allows people to forget, oh, you're that one that some people just forget.
Yeah, exactly. And it takes guts to even consider it, and I give them credit because I know, and I even went to them and said, I know there's not a lot of reason you should do this, you know, to go on a national show and talk about having spent time in prison as a farmer. And so I really didn't blame them for saying no. So it was a lot of conversations and a lot of dead ends, but I still think there was, you know, the reason I told them the only value is possibly to save somebody else from the same fate.
And that was your pitch.
Yeah. And I really think that there's a lot of these, at least in a couple of cases, it was maybe somebody sold grain that was collateral. They didn't think it would be a big deal to sell it, you know, just to get over, you know, another month or so till their finances straightened out or whatever the case. So they didn't seem always to be outside of what farmers might do if they're in a pinch and panicky. And so to hear that kind of story could save somebody else from prison time, possibly.
And then you find someone in Missouri that, was that a letter?
I think
was that a phone call?
That was, let's see, I think I started with a phone call in that case because he was out of prison already. And it was Bramer, Missouri, so Joey Nelson, his name's Garland legally. And we'll talk more about what's happened since, but Joey was wanted some time to think about it. He had, you know, served time for fraud for selling cattle that were collateral on a FSA loan. And had served about 13 months in federal prison, so he was sort of also trying to restart his agricultural business as a cattle feeder.
And did that catch your interest of, wow, going back and almost the exact same thing?
Say that again?
Did it? Well, I'll ask that question later.
Okay.
All right, so you start having conversations with him. What were his reservations at first?
I think, if I remember right, they have a herdsman who works with them, and he and maybe some family were advising him that, you know, this is probably not a good idea.
What's not a good idea?
To go on and talk on, you know, national program about having served time when you're trying to restart. So he though, seemed open to it and didn't really talk about his why or why not. He just said, you know, some of my friends and family are saying I'm crazy, but I think I'm going to do this. And he did, you know, I don't remember him ever saying that what his reasons were.
Okay. So you make the trip down there. You have a conversation with him. What was that like?
It was pretty straightforward. I remember thinking that he definitely acknowledged that he had done something that he knew was wrong. It wasn't just a mistake, which, you know, like where he didn't know the rules that were associated with his FSA loan. I thought he might say that, but no, he sort of took ownership. Yes, I knew this was wrong. I thought it wouldn't be a big deal. I could get away with it kind of thing. Or, you know, I guess he at the time was struggling financially. And so he talked about, yes, I knew it was wrong. And I did it anyway. But then he would also, you know, go and explain, but here's what happened to me. Here's what I think could be fixed in the system. So it was a balance where he took some responsibility, but sort of also explained his point of view and why he thinks he ended up in that situation.
And his case was he had some cattle that he had acquired through a government loan program that was for beginning farmers.
Well, he'd gotten a loan. I'm not sure if they designated what that was for at the time. It could have been for, you know, fence or, you know, other things too. But that was the collateral these cattle were, and he wasn't supposed to sell them without telling the FSA and putting their name on the check also. And in the court records, and we mentioned this in the first story, that he deliberately put, for example, a friend's name on the checks sometimes. And his legal name is Garland, but he goes by Joey, so he also at times would have them write it to Garland or the opposite of whatever was on the FSA loan, so it would be harder to connect. So there was plenty of evidence that he was doing this deliberately, and he acknowledged that too.
And so then he ends up going, how many months, 13, 18?
It was about 13 months at the...
In Leavenworth.
At Leavenworth, at their prison camp, which is sort of minimum security there.
So he's committed, he was released in when? Early 18?
It was March of 2018.
And you talked to him how long after?
I think it was in November.
Okay.
Around that time, October, November, somewhere. So about a year ago now.
And just not even six months after he's released.
Yes.
And he's got people advising him not to speak.
Right.
But he says, I'm going to do it because...
He didn't really explain why.
Okay.
I think I had presented the same concept I'd said to the others that, yes, there's really no good for you personally. And I'd said the same thing, that the only benefit possibly could be to save somebody else from the same fate. But he never, I don't know if that was his reason. He didn't never really express why he decided to do it. But I did also tell him I mainly want to hear, besides what was the crime you went to prison for, I also wanted to talk about what was it like in prison, what was it like being away from family, and how did you sort of try to restart?
Again, trying to help someone else who might be facing a similar decision, maybe why they should go one way and not the other.
Sometimes I think of those stories I've heard, especially in the farm crisis, where a farmer gets in so deep and basically... and starts doing things they wouldn't do, you know, sometimes even becoming suicidal. And I think that's always so unfortunate because there's a lot of pressure on farmers. And you know, here's maybe somebody who can tell you, look, it's not, there's worse things that can happen. You can spend time in prison. Just take a step back and, you know, take a deep breath. So that was my hopes going into this case. And again, he didn't really talk about his motivations. It might've been that he wanted to tell his side of the story. But, you know, when you invite someone to do an interview, that's part of it. You know, they're going to have a chance to say, no, I didn't do this, or I was wrongly accused. But he didn't. He said he did it, and he did try to, you know, justify a bit his why.
And journalistically, that's what you need to do, is you need to, you're not putting Joey Garland on the television and not acknowledging his past transgressions.
Right, because the reason I picked Joey was because I wanted to talk about past transgressions, or whoever might have done the interview with me. This story did get more complicated because I ran into a situation that I've not, you know, I've done journalism for a lot of years, and I've run into, I don't often run into a situation where there's no sort of spokesperson on the law enforcement side who can step forward, especially when so much time has passed. So, you know, I was coming to it, let's see, he'd been, you know, his time had already been served. He was released. I thought it would be easy to have the local sheriff, the county attorney or the U.S. attorney talk. And for various reasons, none of those could go on camera. And I don't know if I need to get into all that, but basically none of them were available or willing, depending on the case, on camera.
And you made multiple attempts to get down to there and discuss that. Okay, I'll come down this Tuesday. No, okay, in 3 weeks I can come. Oh, you got another trial? I can come in 4-5 weeks.
Well, it wasn't even scheduled so much as in one case, the sheriff's office was in Caldwell County, which is where Bramer is. They were very cooperative. They just said the sheriff doesn't go on camera and he's the spokesperson. It was, even though the case was old, it was just, he doesn't do that. And that's fine. That's their choice. As long as they're following the law and providing the basic information, which they were. So I tried the county attorney, but in that case, there'd been state charges that were dropped because the feds were going to go pursue charges. So the Caldwell County attorney had recused himself because of a conflict of interest in that first case. And so then they ended up bringing somebody in from a nearby county who said, I didn't even end up working on it because the feds dropped it. So in his case, he didn't feel comfortable. Like, I don't really know anything about it. And then finally, the U.S. attorney, which did prosecute, but the U.S. attorney who had handled it had left the office and went do the interview. So it was a weird mix of circumstances that meant, like, nobody's going to go on camera. So we really relied on, like, the court documents and charges and had all the, really most of the information we would have anyway, just not maybe a person to sort of bring it into, like, focus, sort of.
And tell that story. After the story airs, that one, what did you hear in feedback?
Some viewers were concerned that we didn't tell more of sort of the behind the scenes allegations, that I knew about, such as the ones the state had dropped. And to be fair, Joy Nelson himself had said, I was accused of stealing a hay trailer, for example. And that was a case that the county had looked at. But again, now you're stuck in a situation. If nobody's going to go on camera, they can't tell you, why did you drop the charges? Did you think they were unfounded, or did you think that the U.S. attorney is going off after him for bigger things, so we'll let it go? So there was, there were neighbors and so on who, not knowing that we had attempted to get these officials on camera, were concerned that we weren't telling more of the things we knew, you know, including original accusations that he was stealing cattle, which were not listed in the final plea agreement. So there was a lot more, but, you know, as a journalist, you sort of have to go with what the final documents say and give a perspective without, you know, possibly wrongly accusing someone of something that we don't know why the charges weren't followed through on.
Right, and allegations are that. And it's not, if it's not backed up and there's not in a court document, and if a charge is filed and then dropped or, you know, something changed, you can report that, but you're not going to report what the neighbor across the way is going to say.
Yeah, we don't. I mean,
as they would say in court, objection, Your Honor, hearsay.
Yeah, and you get that some, the sort of the man on the street interview, but it's typically not our style at Market to Market. It's different for us to cover crime at all, but I really wanted to take this look at, you know, this intersection of agriculture and the law. You could say if charges were dropped, it doesn't mean they're innocent. It also doesn't mean they're guilty. But the problem is you just don't know. So it's and when you're trying to be fair, you try to, you know, paint the picture without maybe getting into all aspects that were investigated if you don't know the inside story.
And we did get emails and we did get Facebook comments and Twitter comments. And I know that people shared it and ended up on a few sites and they were talking about it. And there was some concern about, why are we glamorizing this guy?
Yeah, we had, it was interesting because I think I've talked to the few people that called in. I've since met them. I knew some of them before, maybe, because I all along had been talking to neighbors who had their own stories of problems with Joey Nelson. And so as you talk to them now, it's, you know, coming around as we're getting ready to do the update. So some of those I went back to and said, can you go on camera now? And
what'd they say?
They had different reasons, but no. Now, these were ones who were more closely tied to the case. So it gets very complicated in a small town. And in one case, there might be some danger to family members. So again, I didn't push. I knew I asked multiple times, but I also know that they had very valid reasons for why it wouldn't be smart for them to talk about this. And there's also a new case now. When I was first went down and looked for some people to talk to on the government side, there was, you know, was a closed case. And I guess we didn't explain. There's
well, I guess I never did explain exactly physically where is this location that this happened from, say, Kansas City.
From Kansas City, it's northeast. I think it's maybe about an hour northeast, 45 minutes, something like that.
Okay. So it's close to a major metropolitan area. When we ran the story, I don't think there were any pickups or interest in Kansas City or anything like that. But there was interest. Your phone started to ring a little bit this summer.
Yes. So some of those.
And let me just in case you're listening to this, not in 2019. I'm talking earlier in 2019.
Yes, that was it was this past summer in 2019. So it was, you know, I think 8 months after the story, 7 or 8 months after we'd aired the story, I heard from a couple of the people in the area that I'd gotten to know when I was doing the first story, and they tell me, you probably need to look at Joey Nelson and what's going on again.
And again is what caught your attention, not just look at him.
Yes. Okay. And so they tell me, you know, he's being investigated for the disappearance of two Wisconsin cattle producers, which is correct. It turned out to be true. And
at least from a law, he's still an accused.
Yeah, he was being investigated.
Investigated, yes.
He was investigated. So that as we, you know, like other media, then we're joined in attention on Joey Nelson, suddenly climbs, as you can imagine. So basically, fast forward, he's in jail for allegedly tampering with the vehicle of these two cattle producers who had, we find out later, come to Missouri from Wisconsin because of business dealings with Joey Nelson. And they, you know, came to meet, and government officials say, talk about a $250,000 check that was owed to the two brothers from Wisconsin.
And this is going down in late summer and fall. The pickup truck that the two brothers had rented after they flew into Kansas City was found at an airport parking lot with the keys in it. But the brothers were nowhere to be found. They missed their flight. Family reports them missing. And then the story kind of was, how soon after the brothers went missing and they found that pickup truck did they pick up Joey Nelson into custody?
Well, first of all, it was a park and ride, so okay. It wasn't by the airport.
Okay.
It was in a town called Holt, which is not too far from Bramer, but it was along the interstate there. And they disappeared on July 21st. I think it was within a few days, if at least a week, I can't remember the exact date, that he was taken into custody for tampering with the vehicle. And by that point, the area law enforcement was acknowledging they were investigating and searching his farm, the Nelson farm, for you know, evidence of either the brothers or bodies. So then basically he spends... They announce at some point that they found remains on the farm, and they're doing DNA tests. And then October 23rd, so just recently from when we're doing this interview, they end up charging Joey Nelson with two counts of first-degree murder.
And that was something, from what the show historians can say, not something we've reported a lot on. In Market to Market is the death of two people in this nature and
right.
in a case like this. But given the backstory, journalistically, it's something that we do have to report. I remember trying to write that story that week You were on the road, which we'll get to in a minute. And it was some, it was, I'm used to doing it as a former news producer, anchor, you know, you'd write stories about crime all the time. I used to cover the cops quite often, and I've written hundreds of crime stories. It was just different to do it again.
Yes.
In this scenario.
Yeah. It was so strange because I'm like you, you and I have a background where we worked sort of in more what commercial or general news organizations. And I was in newspapers and, you know, covered crime everywhere from St. Louis to Milwaukee. And so I was very comfortable and familiar with courts and how to cover crime. But I just, you don't expect, beyond what I was doing with justice and agriculture, I didn't expect to be doing much more with it here at Market to Market. And yeah, so it was just a really strange thing to have interviewed somebody who, before there's any kind of, you know, I mean, I was there for a crime, so Joey had a criminal past, but how strange to have interviewed somebody who then later would be accused of murder.
Not something that happens every day?
Not so much, no.
So as this case is, we don't know when charges were going to happen. If you, again, believe what people tell you that you're talking to in Missouri, it's going to happen any day. You were already working on going back down to that area on a separate but yet similar case.
Yeah, it was, well...
I shouldn't say similar, a separate story.
Separate story, yeah. And watch for the story about truckers coming up. We were there for the story about truckers. But I was also going to go back to Braemar because we knew we would be reusing the Justice and Agriculture Project. And that Joey's story, of course, had changed dramatically in the meantime. So my plan was to go back and really gather a little more footage. And again, I ran into the same problem where... exact same reasons that no officials wanted to go on camera, but except that we find out as we happen to be driving to Missouri that exact day when they decide they're going to have a press conference and announce these, first degree murder charges among other charges. But we were still, you know, a couple hours away when it happened. So and it probably doesn't matter because again, that's not the kind of reporting we're doing, but we are working on an update to sort of.
Well, to give you a little background on when we air a story, usually twice, the feature stories. And before the second, before it airs the first time, you have to kind of check and make sure nothing changed with the people you interview. And for sure, 6 to 8 months, 10 months later, when we re-air it, you have to make a phone call or two and say, are you still in this job? Did this program go through? And you follow up to make sure because it's one thing to say, oh, yeah, now it's 42 different people that work at this processing plant, this pork processing plant that, you know, or whatever.
Right.
It's not, oh, by the way, the guy that we featured has since been charged with murder.
Yeah, it was so strange.
It's a whole different thing.
Yeah, and in the first two stories, for example, in Justice and Agriculture, I looked through those and I called the people in the stories, and really, there's hardly anything that has changed. And so I... You know, you would have thought maybe it's just rare to have to have this kind of complete shift in a story when you think you're writing a story about somebody who's sort of served their time, learned a lesson, and is trying to move on. And in the story, original story, I had a Dr. Roseman who's from Harlan, Iowa, and he's kind of known as a mental health expert for agriculture. He's a farmer himself too, but he had. You know, I called him back too, and he said, "Well, in his case, it does look different. And we can't really analyze in this story what's going on with Joey Nelson because you know he's not met him, but he did. It does, you know, that kind of thing. We were talking in general about the stress on farmers, but you know, this might be a whole different thing. Of course, you know, this might step beyond just your normal, well, yes, of course, it's not a normal response to stress, even extreme financial stress. So it's such a sad deal that these, I feel so bad for these farmers in Wisconsin, you know, I mean, the families of the farmers and to have to, you know, who would ever imagine that you'd go visit another producer and have to worry about your life when you go, even if it's very confrontational conversation, you never would imagine that this could happen.
So you, in your newspaper background and in a television sense now where you and your face are not on television, you are not used to someone coming up to you and saying, you're the one from the station. Oh, you're from Channel 4. You're from Channel 12 or whatever channel it is that you're from. But when you were back in Missouri, people knew about your work and knew about your conversation that you'd had.
Yes. And, you know, at the, you know, some of the government offices, they would, oh, you're the one who did the story about Joey beforehand. And so, again, it was just such a strange situation to have this interview before the later crime that became the major news event. The first crime, you know, I talked about and reported on, but it was, and that did get a little bit of newspaper coverage at the time, but of course, a murder case is a whole different thing. And so yeah, I think I was stopped at the Caldwell County Jail, and they were one of those offices where they said, oh, so you're the one who had done that interview beforehand. And a lot of, as you know, a lot of stations in, you know, whether it was Kansas City or Milwaukee, because of being near the farmers' homes, they were all very interested in having permission to use some of the footage.
Interesting. All right, so there was a third part to this story for Ag Justice, and we'll get to that in the coming weeks on Market to Market, but no major updates in that one.
No, not too much. That was the one I'd mentioned about the North Dakota producer who'd, you know, fought to basically prove that he hadn't drained a swamp illegally. It was really a rut in his field that he had gotten permission to take the shoulders off of. And yeah, so it's sort of the opposite where, you know, in one case, the farmer admitted wrongdoing and that was Joey and went to prison. But this is a different case where Lenny Peterson battled to sort of get that victory in court and prove that he'd not been doing anything wrong.
If you ever have a tip or concern, comment, question, and you want to email us, you can do that markettomarket@iptv.org. That's iowapublictelevision.org. That's the general way to get a hold of us. And any other things in your notes or about this interesting case that we should cover?
I think just remember that at the time we're doing this, that there's not been a preliminary hearing even, much less a trial. So we don't know. There's a lot of information in the probable cause or the documents that charge Joey Nelson, but he's not convicted yet. So I always think it's good to remember that, you know.
He's not gone on trial.
We have to wait and see.
And you can't say convicted yet. We just have to say he hadn't gone on trial.
Yeah. He was convicted of fraud before.
Right. And,
yeah.
Which is in a case in a court of law, that's the kind of thing that it flags investigators' attention. And it also is one of those that will probably come up in this court case as well. It's just a matter of if the defense attorney can, you know, we can discuss the legalese of this, but the defense will try to say that's not relevant, Your Honor. And the prosecutor will probably say, yes, it is because of X, Y, and Z. And
right, exactly.
There's a whole lot of legal things that we are not going to be providing.
Right.
A blow by blow of this court case. That is not what we are set up to do or do.
Right. And like you talked about a little bit, it's just, it was kind of a interesting discussion here in the office. What do we do now? You know, this is not our normal coverage area. This sort of landed on us. We weren't seeking. I wasn't looking for a murder case, really. I was actually looking for something like Joey had originally, an FSA loan problem or something along those lines. So it's just so odd that we did end up in this very strange crossover of events.
Those stories will be available on the Market to Market YouTube channel as well as markettomarket.org. Colleen Bradford Krantz, thank you so much.
Thank you.
That will do it for this edition of the MTOM podcast. I'm Paul Yeager. This is a production of Market to Market, the TV show, and from our originating station, which is Iowa Public Television. Again, feedback, markettomarket@iptv.org is the best email to get a hold of us. We appreciate you giving us your time. Thanks for listening.